Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Delve. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Alex.
And Alex, I don't have time to talk to you today because on the show today, we have the one and only Satine Phoenix. Satine, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, it's terrific. It's terrific. I have heard you called the queen of D&D. Is that accurate?
I didn't say it.
Oh, okay.
It was like Time Magazine or something. Oh. I will not confirm nor deny a crown.
But if one was offered?
I mean, I do love playing rogues who collect jewels, so.
Perfect.
But I think that it's very kind and very sweet of people.
We've also had the champion of D&D on before, or sorry, D&D champions, so you know.
There's a champion? You,
apparently.
Sydney Shields. That's what she says. She has a hashtag and everything, so.
We're going to get the whole D&D court.
We're going to get the court.
That's so fun. Court. I want to see the fight to become a champion.
Oh, yes.
Because that would be cool. It's a yearly court. It's a yearly. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm saying.
There's just an arena.
It's an arena. Yeah. That's right. Okay. I just went to the Ren Fair and I saw, I haven't seen a jousting competition since I was like 10, but this was so fun. It was like they're on horseback. And the other time I've seen a jousting competition was at GaryCon. I don't know what it's called, but in the war room, they've got like the history of Dungeons and Dragons and all these really old war games. And one of the games is like you on your horse with your squire and then the opponent with theirs on the other side. And then you line your people up and then you have to like kind of bid. I'm not really sure how the mechanics work on this thing. But when it's time to start, you have coconuts and then you like click the coconuts like you're actually going to joust like your horses, right? Isn't that the cutest thing?
That's perfect. It reminds me of Monty Python.
Exactly. I think
that's the point. Come forth, Patsy.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's the only time I've actually like pretended to watch a joust. But you know what?
You pretended to watch it?
Yeah.
You didn't actually watch it?
Well, no, because they're like little minis, right? And then we like pretended with our imaginations. Yeah. I watched it in my mind's eye.
I love coconuts. So that just sounds delightful to me. I think that sounds
You're not going to eat the coconuts. You're just going to use them to make horse sounds.
Yeah. That's terrific. That's all you needed them for. So I guess where I really want to start is Maze Arcana itself. You and Rudy had co-founded Maze Arcana, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Truth. So, next question.
True. Okay. The lie detector test says yes, you are
the
right.
The answer is yes. Okay. Move on.
So how did Maze Arcana begin?
Well, so I met Rudy at I think it was the Forest Grey premiere and the Storm King's Thunder release event over at Meltdown Comics here in Hollywood. And he was sitting across the table from me and we were playing at Chris Lindsay's table. So I met him and Chris Lindsay at the same time. And we were playing, he and I were playing so well together because I'm a heavy role player and he was heavily role playing. We were helping each other. Whereas a lot of people play D&D, but in encounters, they kind of are so worried about their characters and don't know their characters enough. So they're just like, oh, this is what I do. So he and I were role playing really, really well together. Previously, I've been running the Dungeons and Dragons meetup group out of Meltdown since like 2010. So, you know, over the years I've been doing the charity event and doing that on live stream and, you know, then Critical Role did the thing and then the Force Grey thing. And I was like, well, I'm mostly recovered from the car accident that I was in. I want to do a video stream. And I was already doing like a couple other streams over at Meltdown Comics. And it was just one of those perfect moments where D&D was just lit up. And I was like, I want to do the thing. You're super fun. Would you like to do the thing? It's like, heck yes, I want to do the thing, new friend. And it was just like BFFs instantly. And then so he and I started that. And Chris Lindsay was our champion who helped move it forward. I had started doing this charity event with Keith Baker since 2010. So I've been in love with Eberron because Eberron's amazing. It's Arcana Punk and it's magic in a world that's like post-war. And so the characters and all the NPCs are really intense, like crazy intense. It is a dark, dark place, which I really like. I love fantasy, but I like extreme everything. Just like, I'll take whatever you got and I will make it amplified, right?
Right.
So it was an obvious choice. I was BFFs with Rudy and BFFs with Keith Baker and now BFFs with Chris Lindsay. And it was this beautiful whirlwind of this just needs to happen. I love building communities and Meltdown was great, but I want to reach out to everybody. I want everyone to be my friend and I want to connect with everyone and play with everybody. And so Maze Arcana was a really good way for us to communicate with everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody.
yeah. Everyone.
So you've just been scaling it from the, all right, I have a play group. Now I have a meetup. Now I have a bigger thing. You've just been scaling up to the internet of all things.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, in high school, so it like, I was reading about D&D in like 88, but in 95, I finally found a group of friends who were like, yeah, we play D&D. And I remember we'd read all the Dragonlance books going, man, we should record our games. And then we can like put them in a book. That'd be awesome. Right. 15-year-old Satine is super excited about this. And now like almost 40, I'm living this dream that I had a long time ago with my best friends. It's kind of amazing.
It sounds it. And also Rest in Peace Meltdown Comics. I had just seen that was closing not too long ago. I never got a chance to go. That's a shame. Well, because so many comedians and artistic types were really in and around that. And even not being out on the West Coast, you knew what Meltdown was. So it's too bad that it's gone. It's
you would not believe the people that I met there. Like, what?
Yeah, crazy times, I'm sure. Yeah. So Maze Arcana, as some people may or may not know, has some shows on it.
I hope they know if they listen to the show, because we had Rudy
really
on.
Hope so. Yeah.
And we talked about it. So if you weren't listening, then
You should go listen to those, too.
Well, Maze Arcana is more than just shows. I mean, that's just one of the creative outlets we have. So I'm a comic book illustrator and actress, and he's an actor, and we're both writers, but he's a screenwriter. So we're both fanatics about the community. And streaming is just one of the many things that we do. Like the most important thing that we do, and what we ended up doing, I think like we went to 15 different conventions last year to like teach people how to live stream and how to connect with their community. He and I both run the meetup groups out here in LA with a total membership number of like 4,000 or something insane. Like
that's wow. a lot.
It's crazy. It is so beautiful. So Maze Arcana is a network. We are building more shows, but we're also just building more events and things. I'm not really sure. I guess I should have talked to him about what I'm allowed to say about what we're doing.
You're doing all sorts of things. And
well, I can say that we're doing a world tour, and the world tour starts in a couple weeks where I'm going through Canada for a week. And then we come back and then we go and we're hitting up a lot of the different game stores. So we teach people how to dungeon master. We teach people how to get their games to the next level. We teach players how to role play and read their characters. I have so many shorthand things that I share with people. And that's not really something we advertise. I'm not really sure why, but I mean, we do it on our Patreon, right? So we have our Maze Arcana Patreon, patreon.com/MazeArcana, where he talks with players and I actually run some games, but I work with everybody to amplify their game experience. So that is one of the things we're doing. And when in Europe, it's going to, oh, I'm just so excited. We did this thing, not digressing. There's a girl I mentor. Her name is Fenway. She's 15 years old. She's been dungeon mastering for 2 years, 3 years. I don't know. And she's one of my favorite people on the whole planet. Now, she is this bright, beautiful 15-year-old, she's super genius. I mean, like, I'm really proud of her. She has this game store called Siege Games. Siege Games is one of the coolest game stores I've ever experienced. And the community there is so solid. She had some friends commit suicide. So she decided that she's going to run a charity. And she asked us to come out and do basically 8 hours of seminars, which was great on writing, on storytelling, on game mastering. And things sold out. She raised $8,000. And it was really in that moment. And, you know, we have a lot of game stores out here, but I don't get out to the Midwest very often at all, except sure. for conventions. But I don't get to go to the game stores. And I know my game store, Meltdown, right? Well, yeah. It was Meltdown. Now there's right. Next Gen and Game Empire, and there's all these other ones out here. But going out to another state and experiencing their game stores and their community and having and like talking with everybody, it's magical. Oh my God. Everyone has their own little ecosystem, right? Like right. It goes from the table that you game at and the interactions you have with people and that kind of family. And then it gets bigger. And then the game stores have their own ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Now we're traveling across the world, going to different game stores. I think we're going to hit at least 8 different game stores between England, Paris, and Amsterdam, just out there. And I'm hitting, for my birthday. Actually, I'm not going to a game store there, but there is a meetup for my birthday, May 21st. And that is in Vancouver at the Waterfront Fairmont. So that's going to be really fun. But I digress. Nice. I love digressing. So
we do too. It's a problem.
my point is that it's so freaking magical going to meet all these different ecosystems, right? Mm-hmm. Like I get to see them all. Like I get to experience all of them. And I want to like interview people and I want to talk to people. I want to talk to the game store owners and talk to the different tables and find out what they love and what it is about their store that they have fallen in love with. Cause you fall in love. You create another home for yourself.
Right.
D&D is so much more than just a game that you buy and you play once in a while. It's like everybody that buys in, like it becomes a part of you and these game stores become a part of you. And when Meltdown closed, I cried. It's so sad to see something. I mean, 8 years, I've been a part of them for 8 years. They're inside of my veins. Yeah. I used to run drawing classes out of there. I mean, I used to donate like 3 days of my week just to go hang out and build the community and not even to build the community. I just loved being there.
Yeah.
And I love the people. So, and it just, the byproduct is the community that gets together, that gets to share these wonderful experiences and people get to come out of their shell. You have people who are in couple. I get so many friends who are in relationships, really long-term relationships. And one of them really wants to do a thing and the other one really doesn't. And so a lot of times people end up not exploring that part of themselves, but D&D is that safe place where you're like, I know where my significant other is. They're right. all at the game store. Like they're not doing anything crazy. They're hanging out playing D&D with their friends.
So Alex has actually played Dungeons and Dragons pretty much since he knew what a dungeon and or dragon is.
I played since like 15.
Yeah.
Oh, look at us. Da-da-da.
Yeah.
which I think is a couple of years later than you did. You said you were reading about it in 88. I was one in 88. So
that's okay. We started around the same time.
Right. Right. It's all relative.
It really doesn't matter because it's all about, are you playing it now and how much fun are you having with your friends?
Right. Yes and yes.
Yes. It's a good age to get into it as well when you're like in your mid to late teens. We actually have a group here in town that meets at the library that's like the high school age kids that play Dungeons and Dragons at the library.
So why haven't you joined?
I'm not in high school, Alex.
There are boundaries. That's
fine. I'm there's far this thing past
called
that.
Age boundaries.
Yeah, that, and, there's that problem.
There's this thing with, you know, we love to encourage kids to play. And it's really nice when Fenway Dungeon Masters adults because she surprises people and it's really cool. Mm-hmm. However, there are specific things that are appropriate, right? Now, we like to run very PG-13 games. That way everybody can come along and play. You've got Adventures League, PG-13 usually, and you can play it and everyone has an understanding of how you play it. But, you know, like when I was first running games at Meltdown, there was a boy who was 15 and he was like 6 feet tall. And it was very hard to remember how young he was. and he did something, and he was a video gamer, and his, you know, parents had let him play with us, and I'm like, okay, cool. And he kept doing these weird things, like, I'm gonna collect these bombs. Okay, fine, you have bombs, all right, and I'm gonna run through this forest. Okay, the forest is closing in on you. And he would just keep doing things, and everyone else knows not to do those things, but he just couldn't help it. He'd try to steal from players, and I'm trying to teach him, okay, our house rule is it's cooperative role playing, and by attacking other players, you actually harm the story, and it's not conducive to everyone having an uplifting time, which is what our main goal was.
Right.
And he's in this forest, and the forest is closing in, and everyone's run out. He's like, I'm going to keep going into the forest. I'm like, okay. And essentially, the forest closed in on him and broke all the bottles and had this massive nuclear explosion that like killed him and the entire forest. And he went off and cried. And I was like, okay, so I've learned here that I now need to be more sensitive to who's at my table. And that's really important, because we all want to tell the stories that we want to tell, but really everybody at the table is a part of that story. So that was one of the really neat things that I learned about playing with kids. And then talking with BJ Hensley about Playground Adventures and what she does, which is write stories for different age groups, which is really important. And I have a friend named Bill Allen, and he I think he's like an AV teacher or something. And I met him through my friends at Black Magic. And basically, him and his kids are a bunch of students, and they run camera and sound for us when we travel to the Midwest. Really cool group. And he dungeon masters this group of kids on stream. You can go to their YouTube. I think it's just his Bill Allen. I'm not really sure if it's anything else or called anything specific, but it's pretty great to see an adult running games for kids. He's firm, and you know, he's a good dungeon master, and they respect him. They don't talk over him. And there's this really interesting dynamic. I don't know what I was talking about other than that, but it's really fascinating when you say, you know, like a group of high school kids doing it, because I get that nostalgia feeling, and I'm so happy that it's grown to a place where kids are still playing it, and we can enjoy it in our own way.
I also have somebody who's in town who learned D&D when he was like maybe 8 years old, and he played with his grandmother. So he's actually grown up with it. And now I think he's like 11 or 12. And he can probably teach me plenty about D&D, because my perspective is, and the reason why we even started the show was so Alex could explain how role playing works to me, because I usually get so very lost. So I have not actually played 5e yet.
What?
He hasn't.
It is the easiest, most, it's so easy.
I know.
It makes life so much easier.
I know.
We tried to introduce Nathan to 3.5, which was a robust system. I'm gonna use the word robust. It was a lot crunchier.
Oh yeah.
But like, for me going 3.5 to 5e, I go, where are my feats? And then you go, oh, there's feats. They're optional. And you can take them.
No, feats are at fourth level.
Oh no, I mean the feats you would get every three levels in 3.5.
Oh okay.
But you can gain either the ability points or the feats, I think, in 5e.
Yeah, you can get that fourth, but I mean, yeah.
I'll go with
it. I like fifth edition. I'm sorry. I'm like super obsessed with fifth edition.
No, I do like fifth. It is a lot easier to play and a lot more fun, I think.
Yeah, I've played all of them. I have played every single one. Fourth edition was like playing a video game, which is great because I love video games. It was wild and had all these powers and made you feel like a badass. 3.5 was fun. It's when Eberron came out. And third edition and second edition, I have my original books. The evolution of them all really mirrors what's happening in the world. And I think we have the gatekeeper thing that happens where we're like, this is my edition. Like, that's cool. You can have that. This will always be your edition. I will always accidentally say will save. And I'll always accidentally bring up Thaco. There's no reason for it. I will always say this creature's bloodied, you know.
Right.
And you play with the rules that are most updated. And the reason why they're updated is because they needed to be updated. And yes. things are always evolving. You know, the PlayStation 4 is the PlayStation 4 because they figured out a better way to do it than the original PlayStation. But it's still all optional, right? So right. you've got fifth edition. You can do it's your game. You can play it however you want. If you want to add in stuff from 3.5 or 3 or 2 or 4, do it. If you like these things about third edition, then add that into it. You are the dungeon master.
Can I add Thaco in?
You can have all the Thaco you want.
if you really insist upon it. I think what it really was for me, and I just realized this recently when I mentioned something on Twitter, and everybody said, Nathan, you're a crazy man. I said what I wanted to play as a player character. And you can't technically do it in D&D. Under the current rule set. And
was it the unicorn?
It was the rainbow unicorn, Alex. I want to play a rainbow unicorn. I don't know
Bull
why
crap.
Everybody...
No, you can. In my game, yes. you can play a gosh darn rainbow unicorn. We had Vivid Vivka, who's like, essentially she wanted to be a Gelfling from, okay. you know, Dark Crystal. And I was like, right. all right. It's like, I'm like, okay, that's like a half elf and half sprite situation. So we navigated it. And I worked it out with Chris Lindsay. And if Chris Lindsay says I can do it, if I say I can do it, you can do whatever the heck you want. Like, I had an ex want to be a vampire in a game. He'd never played before, but he just wanted to be a vampire. And I was told by the dungeon master he couldn't. And guess who doesn't play Dungeons & Dragons now? That guy. Because he was told he couldn't. And I think that is more BS than anything. Now, if you're playing Adventures League, that's understandable. There are rules for a reason. You have to do things a certain way. But if you're playing a home game, why not? Honestly, why not?
Yeah. The Hoof and Horn Detective Agency is open for business, Alex. That's right.
That's so cute.
Yeah. He was. Snowball the Unicorn is a detective. He got tired of how, you know, corrupt the system was and started his own detective agency. I have a whole backstory for this.
I love it. I'm gonna tease that. I mean, I'll figure a way to weave it in because that is genius and I will tag you something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So like in the Snowball. Last episode of Sirens, so I on D&D's Twitch stream, I run Sirens of the Realms, an all-girl bard band on tour through Faerun.
Yes.
And it's some of the girls had never played before. Some of them are like old hacks at it. But last episode, I have them trapped in the Underdark, which is amazing because it scares the crap out of them.
As it should.
But I had this whole thing where, and this is a little bit of spoilers, but kind of like one of my favorite NPC characters. So they're in the shallows or in Methbrenir, and then they fall down the waterfall. It's like four tiers of this like city, and they get whooshed off into the darkness, and they land in a giant spider web that basically is like a garbage heap. Because, you know, things go down waterfalls and it basically catches them. And there's all these little old ladies and they're at the bottom. They're like little old, old withered drow. And they have all these bags on their back, like bags with stuff. And they're just like putting things on there like Labyrinth. You remember that scene in Labyrinth when they're like, oh, little, would you like your dolly? Here, have your dolly. And so I have these little creatures and they're interacting with them and they're dumpster diving and having this great time. And they reveal themselves and they're driders, old driders. And but they're like Golden Girl driders, right? It was so much
best
fun.
Best sitcom ever. that sounds incredible.
It was so much fun. And when they realize like putting in little elements of things, like, I mean, I've taken limbs. I maim the crap out of these girls and they love it. And I scare them and they're serious times and they're fun, playful times. And this is just one of those things where you can do things exactly by the book, which is great. Mm-hmm. As long as you're really using the rule sets and letting everyone know if you're going to change any rule sets. Because I have like a whole thing of cure wounds and... Like, I don't agree with a lot of the cure wounds rules and I'm trying to change it, but at the same time, I haven't worked it out to spell it out for my players. So I'm kind of going by the rules just because I don't have time to do that.
Right.
But really it's your game, Dungeon Masters.
I'm curious as what you don't like about cure wounds personally.
Okay. So here's the thing. I have this problem with, so I play a very dangerous game.
I've noted by the Golden Girl Driders.
Well, I like one of my players died because like my encounters in themselves are puzzles. So you have to figure out your way around, and all my bad guys, like if you're going to get in a fight, you're going to risk dying. Like it, people who are ready to fight are really good at fighting. So I like Yanti that have three attacks and each attack does like a minimum of four damage, right? Like if you go into a swarm of five of them, you're going to risk death. So I have a problem with healing word. I freaking hate healing word. I think that you need to be coherent and that it's like a healing word, but I totally understand it's not that way. My crazy artist brain just thinks of it that way. And I understand it's like channeling the word of your whatever and blah, blah, blah. But in my head, I really want you to have to be coherent for that. And also any like magical healing, how it just revives you and you get your hit points. Like that bothers me because you've got stabilizing, right? So it like negates needing to stabilize somebody. And then there's the stabilization spell. So you're like, why do those exist if you don't need to stabilize anyone anymore? So I think if it's healing word, that will stabilize you, but then you have to go further. I'm still working it out.
right.
So like maybe healing word will get you stabilized, but it won't heal you with hit points. Right. But if you have your friend over there and you do healing word, yeah, you're going to, and you do it at second level, you're going to get you're going to get a lot of hit points back. But I feel like there's got to be a little more give and take. Like if you're unconscious, there should be certain rules. And if you're conscious, there should be certain rules. But
right.
That's just me with nerding out.
That's fair. I personally, in the games I've run recently, I don't allow cure wounds or any spells like that in combat.
Oh, really?
To me, it's similar. I want them to feel like there's danger, not just... I told Rudy about this, too. I want them to feel like there's danger and that you can't just, like, spam heal. So for me, it's you can use your healing magic outside of combat because it takes more concentration. Like, you broke a bone, I'm just going to heal it. No, you need to be able to concentrate on the bone knitting back together properly or you're going to set things wrong kind of deal.
Yeah, I love the setting things wrong. That's great. I like it.
You can take it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like in the set, at one point, I was working on a RPG system where healing magic would be ritualistic. So there'd be a couple like necromancy type spells you could use to drain life and heal.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like healing magic was going to be ritual. So you had to be outside of combat and you had to be able to concentrate and actually have knowledge of anatomy to be able to do it right.
So would that take like a minute to do? Or is that
to me, at least a minute. Yeah.
That's pretty hardcore.
I mean, that was in my system, not D&D. So it's a little different, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's a sweet spot.
There really is.
I like it when they cure each other, but I don't want them to just slap each other awake and come up. I think making it like if they are stabilized, you still have to go wake them up. Like, sure, now they don't have to make any more death saving throws because I totally, my dear Vartak from Fury's Fate, he went into the Yontes, he failed his second death saving throw. Couldn't do anything about it because I just learned that there are worse things than death. You could kidnap creatures, you can kidnap players and have like the bad guys take them off and interrogate them or whatever. But yeah, I didn't even have a chance. Anyways, mechanics are fun. I'm not a mechanics person. I'm a storytelling role-playing person, but
right.
You know, working with Rudy, as you talked to both of us, I'm sure you've noticed that he and I are exact opposites, and but we've learned a lot from each other, and I'm learning more about mechanics and the importance of rules, because having brain damage and not being able to remember anything, doing things every single week, I'm relearning the rules in a way that's actually like makes them last longer. It's all really interesting. I have a lot of debates with him too.
Storytelling and mechanics are two things that either go together well, depending on who you're talking to, or
they should go together well. You should always have mechanics should always complement the storytelling, in my opinion.
There you go.
Or vice versa.
I will accept that as an answer. I did have a question about Sirens of the Realm, but before I do that, I do have to say how amazing Arcanites are. because the one person who believed in my rainbow unicorn was DC Lasser, who's one of your mods.
I love him.
Yes. And he was the one who actually, he messaged me after and he was like, okay, ever since you talked to me about rainbow unicorns, I had to figure out how to do this in Dungeons and Dragons. I think I know how you do it. And he gave me this big long list of how I would do it if I ever run it in 5e. And he's like, I'll run it. It's cool. We'll get a few people together. It's like, dude, that's
the luckiest. We have the most uplifting, warm, inclusive Arcanites. Like our friends, they're our friends, you know, and we talk to them and we read the chat for all of the shows. Cause I go back and rewatch everything. And I like to watch all the players and I read the chat room. So I'll watch the same show over and over. And it's just, so it's amazing. I feel a little bit spoiled, but I really feel that they're with us because we are all like-minded. We're here to play a fun, playful game. And even Inkwell, right? Inkwell is a dark game. It is a dangerous, dark game. We almost got murdered by a bunch of kids. it's scary and it's a serious game, but they keep it light and they keep it fun. And sometimes things maneuver and rules change and they're, we don't get trolls, you know, they understand that we're here to play. And as long as we're having fun together, that's what's the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. DC even joined us for a game of golf with your friends, at which point he got to deal with the horror that we were all experiencing. So I'm glad he came for
that. That was great. I'm glad he joined us for that. I think he was the most calm out of all of us.
he has a very even temperament, so that's good for that game.
There was a bit of rage going on.
Yes, it's a rage-inducing game. I will give you that. So on Sirens of the Realm, I did have a question. You were saying it's an all-girl bard band, so they're all playing bards?
Yes, so, and I say all-girl. The core crew, the core cast are girls.
Sure.
But I have guests who are of all preferences. I don't want to exclude anybody. That just, like, I had this crazy idea. I was like, I want to do an all-girl bard band. Jason Miller was like, Satine, that means I can't play on your show. Like, you're one of my best friends, of course you have to sing on my show. So yeah, they multi-class. I think there's one, I think Girasol, Cynthia Marie, is the belly dancer. She's like a lava fire genasi. And she's the College of Swords. And I think she's all bard. But pretty much the rest of them are multi-class. I just felt like it's more interesting and fun and gets them to explore. Also, you know, I pretty much have been playing the same thing for 30 years. So I'm learning about all the other classes. And it's so funny because you don't realize how much you fixate on something. And now I'm like, oh, now I know what a cleric does. And oh, now I know what a warlock is and a sorcerer. And it's really fun to explore it and explore it through their eyes and what they want to do.
Rainbow magician. That's a new class I'm making up.
Prestidigitation.
Prestidigitation. Yes. Oh, okay.
That's a spell, Nathan.
Okay.
It's a spell.
Yeah. It's a spell that Vivid Vivka cannot say. And I won't let her cast it until she says it.
I mean, it is not an easy word to say, by all means.
So on that point, though, and I guess multi-classing kind of explains a little bit about it, but if you have a party that's comprised of any particular class, do you toss just anything at them and see how they make it work, or do you gear the campaign toward the skills they have?
So if I were running it as simply all bard band, all the bards, there's all these subclasses. So each one of them, like, sure, they all have bardic inspiration and they'll sit there and they'll bardic inspire each other over and over and over. They also have very individual things that they can do as whatever subclass they are. College of Lore, College of Swords, Whispers, Glamour. And it's interesting to see how maybe you have three people that are College of Swords and they'll play it differently. Mm. So, you know, some people favor certain spells over others. And it's pretty fascinating. I try to have really massively interesting variants in my encounters so that certain things will tap them physically. And then there are other things that'll tap that, like, them to do like range things. But I also know how they play.
Right.
So I know, like, these monsters will attract these two players and they'll probably fight them like this. So knowing my players, I kind of cater to them specifically. And it's funny, because like recently I found out that like under certain circumstances, when they panic, they pretty much do like the same two or three things. I'm like, you guys have a whole lot of stuff you can play with. You're level six. Like, come on. And they will just fixate on the one thing that they think that they can do, mostly because I put them on a time limit. I count to three, and if they haven't figured out what they want to do by the time I count to three, which is only like 30 seconds after I tell them it's their turn, because they already know it's their turn, and four other people just went before them, so they should know what they want to do by then. They panic and they fall into the thing that they always do. So knowing what they will usually always do, yeah, it's easy to make encounters for them and the way they play.
Right.
Have you ever considered kidnapping them with dragons and making them perform?
Last season was all kidnapping. So here's
was
the
it?
Thing. Yeah. So the whole thing was that, well, I don't want to spoiler it, because the first season, even though there's only like one or two characters that went on to the second season, and that's mostly because these girls are amazing and they're successful and they're doing, you know, really famous things now.
Right.
I had them scheduled for 12 episodes. And then halfway through, a bunch of famous happened. And so one girl wasn't able to make it because she was off interviewing somebody. So I was like, what am I going to do? She's going to get kidnapped. And then another girl is like, oh, I can't make it next week. I'm doing this other famous thing. She's going to get kidnapped. So the entire thing was me balancing a bunch of I actually rewrote the entire story about why they were all kept getting kidnapped. And
they were just that famous.
In real life, it was actually, as a friend, like, I can't fault them for that. That's really cool. Right. Yeah. But they're miserable. They're terrible bards in the game. Like, I told them in the beginning, I was like, what you do will express the kind of famous you are. You got to be famous with riches and popularity, or you'll be famous for being terrible, terrible bards. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's hilarious and fun. But yeah, the first season is what happens when your players can't make it to the table. What do you do with your story? And the answer is, if you kidnap them, you have to write a story about why things are getting kidnapped.
Right.
Spoiler, right. Everyone ends up kidnapped,
but they save each other in the end.
Hooray.
Yeah. But by getting kidnapped, things happen, right? Like, you get insight to things when you're out in amongst the bad guys. It's all about infiltrating and investigating while you're there.
That's what the Unicorn Detective Agency is for.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
There's a story in everything.
Oh, yeah.
All the failures. Like, one of the things I pressed upon them is fail. Roll all the ones. Also, before we even start, tell me how, you know, we'll make a character and they'll have all these items. Okay, that item. You don't have it anymore. How'd you lose it? That person over there, how did they die under your watch? You know, so like, they have all these amazing flaws. And then when they get in like the habit of creating those character flaws, then they just go and they keep making more flaws. And I just step back and I'm like, oh man, these are brutal characters. And so it's really nice. And they embrace the ones that they roll. And I make them tell me if they crit, and they kill something, they tell me how they killed it. If they roll a one, I tell them to tell me how they failed. And also, they will pretty much always do damage to themselves if they roll a one in an encounter. And they love it. Sometimes they knock themselves out. Sometimes they knock each other out. But they always have fun.
Do you enjoy turning weakness or flaws, in this case, into a character's strength?
I enjoy that in real life as well.
Well, that's excellent.
I encourage that in real life, because you get a lot of people who tell you, you need to change. Whoever you are, you're not the you that I want you to be, and you need to change. And the truth is that we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses. And this is real life. This isn't just Dungeons and Dragons. I learned a lot by playing Dungeons and Dragons my entire life. And one of them was, there are certain stats you cannot change, but you can work towards making better over time. But also, you should really embrace the different parts of you. If you're not strong, then embrace that. Make it better, or make something else stronger and to balance that. So that's kind of my thing. in life.
compensating for the weakness, yes. You're not physically strong, then train your brain.
Yeah, and that's if you don't want to work out. Like, for me, I designed the woman I am from when I was in high school. I kept playing these games where I'm like, okay, I want to play smart, and she's strong, and she's so fast. Then in my 20s, I got a trainer and I became a fitness model, amongst other things. And it was like, wow. And I would go to these places out here. There's a thing, I don't know if it's still around anymore, called Mindshare. It's like TED Talks, but for burners. Oh. And, you know, I was like, wow, I'm hanging out, drinking with all these like Harvard and MIT folk. And yeah, we all talk about Dungeons and Dragons, and working out and traveling to Tasmania, you know, hiking mountains. And I literally became the adventurer that I'd been designing since high school. And that was really important to me, like learning what charisma means, learning what intelligence and what wisdom means, and really using, not even on purpose, this is all accidental. Like, oh, I could just make these characters. I really like the way this character does this. I'm going to do that in my real life.
So role playing really taught you a lot about yourself.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
And it's funny because I'm exploring more things. Like, I'm a do-gooder on a crazy level. I've been doing charity work since I was 11, and I cannot help it. Like, I see people, and I want everyone to, you know, be the best they can be and have them what they can. And I want everyone to come together and have fun and whatever it is. And I raise money for charities and stuff. And so I'm trying to learn about the other parts of me, because we all have playful parts and mysterious parts and dark parts. And I explored a lot of things in my 20s, but in my 30s, I kind of became like champion paladin type character. But now I'm like, wow, in Inkwell Society, I'm exploring these mysterious parts. And, you know, it's a character, and I'm not scandalous or anything, but this character I'm playing, she's a crazy girl.
Right. This is Rose, right?
Yeah, Rose is, she's an Undarian. I don't know what I'm allowed to say. She lives in Sharn. She lives in the lower dirty Duras, and she is not from there at all. And she hates it, and she likes everyone to know that she hates it. And she doesn't belong there. And she's about to reveal a lot of character things that are going to shock a lot of people. Mostly because I'm playing her, and it's different for me, but it's also really fun to like just kind of exist in that for a little while.
People aren't expecting that from you, are they?
I don't think so. I don't really know what people expect from me. Like, I really don't, because I feel like the last 8 years of my life, nobody expected me to like start running Dungeons and Dragons charity anything.
Right.
So yeah, I feel like what people expect, I literally have no idea. But for me, it's on what I expect. And that's what really is important, right? Like, I can't really think about what other people might want from me or might expect. I can just be the best person that I can be. So, like, just being a super, super, super do-gooder, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, scandal, intrigue, naughty. What is she doing? She's living with Hermaggio, but she's flirting with Felix. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God. This whole town. We'll talk.
The entire town will talk. Oh my goodness.
Oh my God. It's the talk of Eberron. We don't know what we'll do. Rose is probably a good place to start with Inkwell Society, because I was kind of wondering what the development process was for that character for the show.
So Rudy is a brilliant, bold storyteller, and he got us all together because we like to do session zeros for our games. In mine, I do, like, we're all fun, we're playing together, and everyone has their own thing that they do. But in Inkwell, he brought us all together and had us all come up with, like, what we brought to the table were ideas, but we came up with the characters together. So we're like, you know, this would be good, but maybe this person's from here, and this is how we relate to each other, or maybe I know this person, but I don't know anyone else. And it was this beautiful round table of us going, based on these flaws and characteristics and vices, I think this would be better, or maybe this is better suited for that character. And it was this orchestra, right? And then we took that and went back and then created our backgrounds, and we worked them out with him. And he's, you know, he's used to, what's it called? Sky something. I don't, it's a writer thing where they sit in a room with a big group of people and then they come up with big ideas and they negotiate them, which I'm a recluse comic book artist, writer, and I'm not used to that. Yeah. But this was a really good experience where we were all involved, and then we went off and then we negotiated our background. So it was, it, the characters belong to each other, but they also, like, we are the, like, we get to be the characters in a different way. So Rose was created because B. Dave and I knew that we wanted to know each other. Like, we, our characters wanted, like, we wanted to play characters who interacted and like lived together. And then we had this like thing, this idea about a history relationship thing. And then that instigated this other thing from these other players. And yeah, it's kind of how our characters came to be. And then I just went off on some crazy Zsa Zsa Gabor meets Jessica Rabbit meets Italian Lucille Ball. I don't even know.
Well, that sounds lovely. So that wasn't necessarily something you planned on doing at the beginning, but that's just kind of how it's evolved.
Yeah. I mean, we knew that we were going to play a noir game and that the stakes were really high and we would start with nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, what would be, what is dramatic in that regard? Where do you have to be to lose a whole lot of stuff in order to get stuck in a place like this? We watched a lot of, we watched Altered Carbon, Dark City, Blade Runner. We got a lot of inspiration from those types of things. But yeah, coming up with characters for a noir setting is really hard because I play D&D to be a champion. I want to save the princess. I want to kill the dragon. I want to reap the rewards of all these things. And by playing in a noir game, it's a different experience. Your reasons for all the decisions you make are very personal. And the way you interact with your players, like, yes, you have to buy in to work together, but why, like, your reasons for buying in are a little more selfish. It's really interesting. Are you going to be able to redeem yourself from your past? What is your, how bad is your past that you ended up in a place like this?
Right.
It's really cool.
Are those the kind of qualities that you like your characters to have in role playing?
Yeah. I love the duality. I'm a Gemini, so I exist. Oh, hey. When's your birthday?
June 14th.
Well, happy coming up birthday. Mine's May 22nd.
Ah, happy birthday coming up closer.
I love the duality. I love that everybody has a purpose and a reason. This is basic storytelling, right? You have the facade of the character, and then you have the backstory of the character and like the drive of the character. And everything, every decision somebody makes is based off of a need in that moment. So it's like anytime, anything that the character says to you, it's to get something.
Right.
So your NPCs have a reason and a purpose. It might seem like just a nonsense conversation, but even a merchant, that merchant is going to want you to buy something, or you're going to piss it off and want you to leave.
Yep.
You know, so it's like all my NPCs have really, like, they are dynamic, maybe not as dynamic as Rudy's because his brain is huge. But my PCs, they are my characters. They all have now, especially after the last, I don't know, a couple months of playing and teaching people. Like, it's almost like the more you teach people, the more you learn about yourself. And now my characters are really interesting. I've been developing the Vlanya character for Sirens. And that character is someone I made when I was 15. And I've been able to take it with me into my adulthood. But I never, like, I haven't fleshed her out since second edition, right? So right. I'm trying to come up, like, who is she now? And who is she now to me? And she is so intense. Yeah, she's a bard wizard. Like, I'm not going to tell you what college she's in. But, like, yeah, it's really intense. So the choices I'm making now based off of what I know about storytelling and story structure and from my experiences in teaching and also doing these streams, you know, because we're basically writing shows. It's more than just a game. The tabletop games I run for our Patreon people are totally different than the ones I run on stream. for so many reasons, like the pacing, the way I interact with the characters, just having them at the table is a big difference, but just everything is totally different. So I've just learned so much. The next thing I write is going to be awesome. Just because I have learned so much.
Sure, absolutely. I was kind of wondering like what the difference is between, I always figured if you're going to be doing a live show, there is a performance element you don't necessarily have to do in a home game, but might be useful in one. But again, I'm talking as a person who doesn't really know what he's talking about.
Someone who hasn't played D&D.
Right. It's like, I don't
know. Well, you know, live show, like, so I've been doing stage theater since high school. We have these boom mics that hang down. We still have to project towards them because we used to have lav mics, except for our hair would get caught in them and all these other problems. There's just a lot to think about while you're streaming. And Rudy and I are executive producers, and there's only a crew of four of us. So we're not only sitting in the DM chair, but we're watching the switcher to see what he's doing. We are our directors. We are our producers. We are our camera people. We're the lighting people. Our brains are doing so many things. I mean, I look at my other friends doing streams over at like Geek and Sundry and Hyper, and it's like, oh, they've got full on teams. They are so lucky.
I only have Nathan, so.
And it's more complicated.
Except, you know, this is just looking at a microphone.
Yeah, and you have to think, okay, how do I sound? How do I come across? I have a problem. I say and like all the time. I've been living in the valley for a long time in LA, and it's contagious. So
yeah.
But I'm also me, right? So I like to be me, and also I know what I'm doing. I'm performing. So it's not like GM tips at Geek and Sundry. This is in my house. This is done for an audience. It's a very weird, like, you know, you're here. Yesterday was a whole thing where I was hardcore role playing, but I was also standing outside of myself watching this whole thing happening. So I'm like laughing at myself while I'm doing it. It was, and that's not what you do as an actor, but it's also, it's like, I don't know, live streaming is somewhere in between all of those things.
Yeah.
But there's a lot to be mindful for.
I certainly hope you enjoyed that interview with Satine Phoenix. We actually have more to that interview, which we will be releasing for the next episode. But, you know, I got to range out. You're awesome, folks. Too much, and it's just going to be an awesome explosion. This is a marathon, not a sprint. However, good news, if you want more Satine in your life, and why wouldn't you? You can go over to twitch.tv/MazeArcana. There you can find Inkwell Society and Sirens of the Realm, and you can see her and Rudy in action doing on screen what she was talking about in this episode. And then you can get all caught up so that you can come back here for part two when it releases. The rest of this interview is actually really interesting, and it gets into deeper territory than we usually go into. But it is just so worth it, and we learned a lot about her upcoming book, Mirror Into the Maze, and on that topic talked a lot about, you know, people's personal connection to role-playing games and what it can do for them. It's really great stuff, and I think you're going to enjoy it. But until then, in addition to following Maze Arcana and, of course, at Satine Phoenix on Twitter, you can also find us on Delvecast.com, and you can find us on iTunes and Google Play, and rate and review and subscribe when you go. And you can also find us, you know, those guys that interviewed Satine Phoenix on that show that one time. I am at Citanium, Alex is at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast. This interview was just so satisfying. I mean, there was like 10 minutes or so after Satine was off the call that Alex and I were just kind of sitting there thinking to ourselves, okay, that happened. Wow. Like we were kind of beside ourselves that we had just kind of gone through that experience. So I hopefully all of you got that same kind of feels out of it, and that you'll really appreciate the second part of this interview, where we get a lot more in depth with people's personal relationship with role playing, because games are games, but games can also mean a lot to people for their emotional state, their personal lives. And we actually got to talk about that with Satine Phoenix. And how awesome is that? Thank you for joining us on this episode. And Snowball the Rainbow Unicorn is a thing now. You're welcome.
The best chicken. It's really just not chicken. It's just flavor.
It's flavoring.
It's a flavored nugget of Discord chicken goodness.
God, you know, but if you put the word Discord chicken together, I don't know. Doesn't sound so tasty.
That makes me think of disco chicken.
Or disco
that
duck.
Actually, disco chicken sounds better, actually. I'm into that.
Disco duck, did you just?
Discord
disco
duck.
Disco duck us. Mm.
There should be a hi, Discord guys. Duck channel. Oh, hi, by the way.
Hi.
Is that the kind of thing that you look for in your PCs when you're playing something that is going to be noble or flaws that have to be redeemed?
You mean for general?
For player characters in general that you play, are those qualities you like to have for them to have? There, I can structure.
You can word.
Eventually.
Nathan
word.
Word's great.
I can word.